Hey, this is Joe Harris, writer of the X-Files comics. You're listening to the X-Cast.
Welcome to the X-Cast. The truth, well, the truth is that after more than a year of soaking himself in X-Files lore and mythology, Tony is currently cowering in the fetal position under his dining room table, fearing alien bounty hunters, space ghosts, and invisible gorillas are all out to get him. So instead, I am Andrew Brooker, and I'll be sitting in the Tony bum-shaped indentation of the host hot seat, and joining me in his first X-Cast appearance ever is veteran podcaster Mike Schindler. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on, mate. It's a pleasure to have you on. So yeah, a first timer for the X-Cast.
Yep, I've talked about the X-Files on other podcasts, but I've never talked about it here, so it's exciting.
I have to admit I was quite nervous about jumping on my first episode and talking specifically about one episode of The X-Files. It was a weird thing for me. I don't know if it is for you. It's not for me anymore, but
I mean, you know, the format is a very interesting discipline, because, like, I've definitely talked about individual episodes before. Like, we did a thing on my show where, like, right after the new season aired, we would jump on and do, like, live, you know, like, after shows. But, like, to sit down and go through, like, scene by scene, you know, it's tricky, especially if you get, like, a really bad episode where there's nothing to talk about. That's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind bad episodes. Bad episodes, at least you can slate. Bland episodes that are just boring, they're the worst ones I've found.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, I mean, the episodes where you're just like, oh, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah, but if it's, like, middle of the road, it's just like, I have nothing to say about this thing at all. Yeah. Yeah,
we've definitely had a few episodes like that in the past. I've been on a few episodes like that in the past. Yeah, it's a struggle to get something to talk about. But today we're going to be talking about Soft Light, which is maybe not the best episode, at least in my opinion. But I don't think it's bland in any way. But before we get to that, as we have to for all first timers, we have the five questions of X for you, my friend. Are you ready for these?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
So the first question: when did you first discover the X-Files?
Well, it was in season one. I was, like, babysitting for some kids. I was, like, 13 years old. I was babysitting for some kids. And, you know, everyone had been talking about it at that point. But they're like, hey, X-Files is on. You know, this is a show that we watch. We're going to watch it. And the episode was Eve. And I thought it was cool. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to just jump into the middle of this thing. You know, I hear it's got a pretty dense mythology and all that stuff. So I waited, even though, like, all of my friends and everything over the years were like, this is the best show ever, you know. And it wasn't until, well, it was during season five that the show went into syndication. And FX here in the States made a big deal about how they were going to be showing every episode from the beginning, you know, like Monday through Friday. So I'm like, oh, great, here's my chance, you know, and then I'll be all ready for the movie that comes out next summer. So I did that. You know, I was lucky enough at that point. I was a senior in high school, and I had, like, literally five periods out of a 10-period school day that I spent in the television studio, and where I had access to, you know, a television and a VCR. So I basically spent half of my senior year in high school just watching X-Files, which, honestly, I mean, I probably got more out of that than I did out of the rest of my education, but whatever.
Yeah, I think I could say I probably got more out of the X-Files than I did out of most of my education as well.
Yeah, you know, so take that as you will. But yeah, I mean, so I finished it, you know, in time for the movie, and, you know, I went to see the movie on opening day, and it was amazing, and, you know, I've been a fan ever since.
That's a hell of a, yeah, binging one to five at school. I never would have gotten away with that, I don't think.
It was kind of great. You know, they kind of just let me alone. You know, I spent my lunch hour there. I had late arrival and early dismissal and everything. And it's like there's not much to do. It's big. You know, you can find a little corner with a TV and a VCR and just watch X-Files with no lights on.
Nice. Sounds like most people that I know's dream. Back when we were kids.
Yeah, I know, right?
So do you have a favorite episode of The X-Files?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, but in a lot of ways, I think I'd have to say the movie. You know, there was so much, I guess, hype and everything surrounding it that by the time I, you know, finally got to see it, it kind of blew me away. And in a lot of ways, I feel like it was the culmination of the first 5 years and also a perhaps unfulfilled promise of something even bigger and better to come. And on top of all that, I think it's just extremely well crafted. So I know it's maybe an unpopular choice, but I think I'd have to say the movie is the best.
I mean, you know, not for absolutely nothing like the reason of it being the same as my answer. I think that was a pretty good answer.
Oh, nice. All right, cool. High five.
Yeah, I mean, the movie for me was about the time I was probably A, old enough to understand it, B, old enough to get excited about it, and C, it was a movie. But, that which was basically my answer when Tony asked me, which is nowhere even close to as good as your answer, but the movie definitely.
It's pretty great. It holds up, for sure.
It does hold up very well. Better than a lot of the older episodes. Better than a lot of the older episodes do. It's much better than a lot of the older episodes, in fact. So what about a favorite season? Do you have a favorite season?
See, that's really tricky because, I mean, I really do see X-Files as similar to, you know, like Star Trek, you know, especially like the original series where it is way, way, way all over the place in terms of quality where, you know, you'll get like a couple episodes which are just total garbage and then, you know, the next week you'll see like one of the finest hours in television history, you know? And, I think that the highest of the high points tend to come in season three. But I think as far as, like, consistency is concerned, I'd almost say, like, season five is sort of, like, the most refined and you know, the highest level of consistent quality. And, I mean, maybe part of that is also just sort of that bias of, you know, it being right before the movie, you know, and sort of like the hype and everything. And, you know, for me, watching it essentially like live for the first time, you know, along with everyone else. But yeah, I'd say that season five is probably my favorite.
I do agree with you though. And especially since I've started watching them to be more critical of them on episodes of the X-Cast, I found that there are more duff episodes in the seasons I remember liking than I remember.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I think they get worse as the years go on as well.
Although, you know, I mean, and this is sort of like a thing that I realized, I think, after the fact, you know, sort of going back and rewatching when the DVDs were released and everything. But, you know, a lot of people give the later seasons a lot of crap, you know, once Duchovny is gone and all that stuff. But, you know, while it may not be as good as the early seasons, which is some of, you know, the best television ever, it's still really freaking good. It's still better than most television, you know?
So, oh, for sure.
Yeah, but there is definitely a variation in terms of quality throughout the entire show, for sure. But, you know, I mean, like, I mean, this is like a thing which it came up, you know, it still comes up, you know, it's coming up again now because it's been renewed, you know, but when those six episodes aired last year, you know, and everyone's like, oh my God, they're so bad. I don't even want it to come back for a season 11. And like, my thinking is like, I will take five episodes of pure crap to get one Mulder and Scully meet the Weremonster, you know? I mean, that's totally worth it right there. If you can guarantee me an episode of that quality every season, then I'd say they should be making X-Files from now until the end of time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you bring up a good point, because as we record this, they've just confirmed, haven't they, that season 11 will be coming at some point in the next season. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely one of those that kind of got to the end of the revival and went, I don't really want any more. And looking back on it, I think it was just, I was a bit disheartened. I wanted more, and I wanted more of the great episodes. But you're right, when you put it like that, okay, I think we're getting a 10-episode season this time around. So if I can have two great episodes out of it, I think 9 bad and 1 where Monster might be pushing it a little bit. But if I can get two great episodes out of that, I think I'll come out of it smiling.
Like, I don't think that any of those episodes were bad. It's just they weren't, you know, fantastic necessarily. And I think that the approach that they took was not exactly the best. But
no,
what can you do? What can you do? Maybe they'll learn from their mistakes. You never know.
We can only hope. So who would be your favorite character in the X-Files then? It doesn't have to be a main character. It can be a cameo, a side character, whoever you fancy.
I think it would have to be Scully. I know that's boring, but I think it's true. I mean, a lot of that has to do with, you know, Gillian Anderson's performance and everything, but, you know, the idea of the skeptic and everything who keeps, you know, Mulder on his toes and sort of like her journey into, you know, believing herself and everything. I think it's pretty good. But Gillian Anderson's performance is so good. I really love Scully.
There's nothing wrong with that answer at all. Absolutely not. Okay, then, so your final question will be your favorite moment from The X-Files.
Yeah, this is tricky because, like, I don't even know what that means necessarily. And, I mean, it could be, like, a scene or whatever, I guess.
Having to pick one scene for more than 200 hours is pretty tough.
Yeah. But I guess if I had to pick something, it would be the opening scene of Jose Chung's From Outer Space, which, if we're going to be completely objective about it, maybe Jose Chung's From Outer Space is the best episode of the series. But that first scene where, you know, the kids get abducted by the aliens and then the aliens get abducted by other aliens and, you know, the dialogue, the way that, you know, that one alien turns to the other and says, you know, what the hell is that? How should I know? Whatever that they say there. Like, that to me is amazing because it pretty much signals that this show can now do whatever the hell it wants to, you know? It's like, I mean, if you go back and look at, you know, the pilot or even the entire first season, and you say, okay, at some point in this show, in not too long from now, there'll be an episode where Jesse Ventura and Alex Trebek play Men in Black, and they name check Alex Trebek. Like, you would be like, what? Are you insane? And yet it totally works, and I love it because, I mean, you know, like I said, this show can literally be whatever it wants to be. You know, it earns that, and it's still completely true to, you know, the mythology and the series and everything, and yet, you know, tonally, it's all over the map. And I love that. I love that, you know, you never know what's coming next, that you can have a psychological, you know, horror story one week, and then, you know, an all-out comedy the next, and it totally works, you know, and that moment, I think, more than any other. I know they did some humor before that, but that was just so over-the-top, crazy, insane, that was the moment to me which sort of signaled that, you know, all bets are off, this thing could be anything.
That's a fantastic choice. I would say, yeah, that would be a top moment for me. I haven't watched Jose Chung for a while.
That, that episode holds up too. I mean, all of the Darren Morgan episodes, I think, are pretty fantastic.
They are. Mainly because Darren Morgan has a great... His comedy in all of his episodes is pretty timeless.
And the other thing about it is, while they are all very funny, they're also, like, philosophically, like, some of the deepest episodes of the show, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you come out of that, you know, and after you stop laughing hysterically, you just kind of, like, think about the meaning of existence, and then, you know, you're like, oh, okay, now I'm depressed, or whatever. You know, I mean, I love that. I absolutely love that. He's so good. I really wish that there were more episodes by him, but then again, you know, just having, like, the five or six that he wrote, you know, as these sort of, like, little perfect gems, I think is kind of great, too.
So, Soft Light is the 23rd episode of Season 2 of The X-Files. It was originally aired on the 5th of May, 1995. Jeez, I wasn't even 13 when this episode aired. Wow, okay. Moving on. It was written by Vince Gilligan and James A. Contner. I don't know much about James A. Contner, but obviously a lot of people know who Vince Gilligan is now.
Yeah, Kantner was the director, and he did a number of episodes of the show, I believe.
My apologies. It was directed by James A. Kantner, not written by James A. Kantner. Yeah, and obviously written, Vince Gilligan's first episode, or the first episode that he wrote, he went on to do obviously quite a few, you know, Bad Blood and Pusher for...
Really? This is the first one he wrote?
This is the first one he wrote.
Oh, wow. I wish I would have known that before I started watching it again.
To be honest, I didn't realize. Obviously, I spotted his name when I watched the episode, but... I spot his name when I watch a lot of episodes. It didn't click until I started reading up. So, wow, this is his first. Interestingly, though, his script originally had, instead of Tony Shalhoub's character's shadow just being lethal, it was supposed to be its own entity that went off on its own and started killing people. I think they may have considered it to be a little bit far-fetched. I'm not sure how you consider that to be far-fetched and then make the episode that we've got. But yeah, it was edited quite a lot. You know, a lot of people had input into the script afterwards from what I've read. But yeah, Vince Gilligan's first ever X-Files episode.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah, I mean, you look at the career that guy has had since this episode, and it's kind of insane.
Two apparent abductions in less than a month, and then this one last night. According to my contact, the Richmond PD's hit a brick wall, so... I told her we'd come down and have a look.
Who's your contact?
Her name's Kelly Ryan. She was one of my students when I was teaching at the academy. She's just been bumped up to detective, and she's a little nervous about her supervisor finding out the FBI are involved.
Kelly?
Agent Scully.
Hi.
Hi. This is Agent Mulder.
Hi, thank you for coming.
Hello.
Heard a lot about you.
We'll talk later.
The missing man is... Patrick Newirth, age 52. He's a top executive with Morley Tobacco, up from Raleigh-Durham for a meeting. He arrived on an evening train.
How do you know he's missing?
Well, he said a wake-up call for 6 a.m. this morning. When the operator tried to place it, there was no answer.
Scotch. Looks like he barely touched it.
Needless to say, he missed his meeting. They waited 3 hours before sending hotel security up. The door was locked, security chain fastened, and when they broke in, no Patrick Newirth.
Windows?
Locked from the inside. We're 6 stories up, no fire escape. No way in or out of this room. Agent Scully, what are you looking at?
The heat register.
You don't think anyone could have squeezed in there?
You never know.
What would you rate this episode out of 10?
I would give it a 7.
Is it? That's quite a high score. Is it just really entertaining, or?
I mean, I don't know if it's that high. I mean, let's not go overboard. You know, I mean, I'm not like this is amazing. I'm like that's a pretty good episode. Yeah, that's solid. I think what I like about it is that it starts off as sort of like prototypical X-Files. You know, like oh, there's a weird thing. I wonder what it is. Oh, we're putting the clues together. We're figuring it out. You know, I mean, that kind of thing. But then, like, you know, about two-thirds of the way through, it takes this weird turn with Mr. X and becomes something completely different character-wise. And that's what I think works really well in this episode, you know. I mean, not to mention the fact that, you know, Tony Shalhoub is great as per usual.
He is infinitely watchable in almost every... He's always the shopkeeper alien from Men in Black for me.
Yeah.
And, he's even in that really ridiculous role, he's brilliant. I don't think I'd give it quite so. I think it's a solid 6 out of 10 for me. It's not a bad episode by any stretch, and it's not boring. It does feel very middle of the road. It ups it a little bit when you get to, like you said, when Mr. X makes an appearance and we get a little bit of government stuff and it looks like there's a bit of conspiracy surrounding Tony Shalhoub, but I don't think the people falling into the pit of darkness was that interesting. Certainly not to start with.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of problems, which I'm sure we'll get into, you know, as we go along. But yeah, it's decent, but it's not an episode where I'm going to be like, oh yeah, let me grab my DVD and pop in Soft Light. All right, this is going to be amazing.
I can get my Tony Shalhoub fix from many other places before I go to Soft Light.
Exactly. But it's still pretty cool.
It's interesting. It has an 8 out of 10 user rating from just over 2,300 user votes on IMDb, which is a lot of the... I found a lot of the X-Files episodes tend to hang around 8.5 and 9, even the rubbish ones, mm-hmm. unless they are absolute garbage, then they're quite low. So 8 is There's not a bad score for this, I don't think.
No, not at all.
So we open up in a hotel in Richmond, Virginia, where we first see Chester Ray Banton, who's played by Tony Shalhoub, pretty much one and only celebrity spot in this episode that isn't Mr. X. And we find him frantically knocking on the door of a room, screaming out for a person called Morris, who he's very desperate to talk to. Morris doesn't answer the door at all, guessing he's not there or ignoring Chester Banton. But he does gain the interest of a man on the other side of the hall who starts looking through his peephole in his hotel door to see what's going on. Banton kind of starts stepping backwards away from the door, and as his shadow stretches under the door, the guest who's looking at Banton through his peephole vanishes into the shadow, evaporating, leaving nothing but a strange burn mark on the floor. Mr. Banton finds out what's happened, or realizes what's happened, turns the light off, and legs it. So that's our cold open. What do you think to the cold open in this?
I mean, I guess it's intriguing enough. I mean, the thing which I think we'll see throughout this episode, you know, which I'm willing to cut them some slack because whatever, but like for a show which is kind of known for having this amazing visual style, which relies on kind of like sculpting light with shadows, it seems like the people who made this particular episode have absolutely no idea how shadows work. So that's a little troublesome, but whatever.
There's that bit and the bit just as he runs away. So you see him, you see Tony Shalhoub running away, and it looks like the shadow is just kind of sauntering behind him as it goes. And I think that kind of, that gives the impression of maybe what was supposed to happen with Gilligan's script, and it being, you know, had the shadow taking on a life of its own and doing its own thing.
Yeah, and they do kind of like reference that sort of idea later on when he's talking about it and saying like, it will kill you, blah, 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 you know, that sort of thing. It doesn't care, whatever he says. So I can definitely see where that, you know, was sort of like left over, but, and I know you're trying to convey something visually, which, you know, may not play as well on film as you would hope, but there are some effects here in terms of like where the shadows fall and all that stuff, which are a little suspicious, but yeah, yes. I mean, as far as, you know, the cold open is concerned, I mean, I think it's solid conceptually, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it puts a little intrigue in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's a very, very typical X-Files teaser.
So, opening credits are done, and we meet a local detective, Ryan, who's talking to, who ends up talking to Mulder and Scully. They've been brought in kind of on the quiet to help this detective out with her case of the missing man with the scorch mark in the hotel room. Because it turns out he is the latest in two or three missing persons cases that's only left this scorch mark on the floor. So Mulder and Scully come along, and Mulder finds starts coming up with strange and wonderful ideas, having wandered around and looked at the hotel room. Interestingly, actually, I wanted to mention this earlier. The guy who vanishes, the original guy who we discover has nothing to do with the story at all, he works for Morley Tobacco.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if it's done just to make you think this is a conspiracy episode or tied to the conspiracy, but when I watched this the other day for the first time, I kind of went, oh, okay, this is going to be, something's going to be weird here. And I spent the entire first time I watched it waiting for the conspiracy things to happen because it was Morley Cigarettes.
You know, it's interesting because obviously everyone knows Morley from, you know, X-Files, but Morley is the generic cigarette brand, which is sort of like used by lots and lots of movies and TV shows going all the way back to Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho was the first,
yeah,
the first known instance. And, you know, it's crazy because I didn't know that, you know, and I mean, like, it's certainly most visible in X-Files, and they do this one. There's another episode where they go to like a Morley Tobacco Factory or something like that. And, you know, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I like that there's like a Morley cinematic universe, you know, which includes all these things like, you know, Breaking Bad and, you know, I think the first time I ever saw it outside of X-Files was Spy Game, you know. But I like it because it sort of adds to the believability of the universe in a sense. You know, we've seen this prop everywhere, and now they're sort of saying, like, Morley is an actual company and this guy works for it, and it doesn't matter outside of that. But it's just kind of cool that they sort of like tie in all of these little pieces to sort of like, you know, create this fabric of reality.
Make their universe a little bit more real.
Yeah.
Which brings me on, actually, because while they're investigating the room, it's one of the few times the X-Files done this, they slightly throw back to Squeeze, mm-hmm. with Scully checking vents in the wall to see if maybe somebody had come through it.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. Which got a little smile out of me, because it's not something they've done very often, especially not for Monster of the Week episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
They didn't kind of reference them a little later on.
And it's extremely subtle. It's just like one of those things where it's like, if you know, you know, you know, but...
But if you do, it makes absolutely no difference to you if you don't, or if you just don't get it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Mulder very quickly puts everybody on edge by suggesting that our local tobacco salesman has spontaneously combusted because all the doors and windows are locked from the inside and... There's just a little scorch mark. This is his first idea, is spontaneous human combustion. All while this is happening, Mr. Banton is sitting on a train, very cautiously looking at the floor, worried about his shadow, searching for some soft light so that his shadow can't be seen. After he leaves, Banton is confronted by two police officers who are patrolling the area, and despite him warning them to stay away, the officers step into his shadow and vanish, leaving yet more scorch marks on the floor. Now, it took me a second watch to get to this point and realize that actually here we still don't know who he is, and the police still don't know who he is. It was just a really unfortunate accident and a really, you know, a proper bit of wrong place, wrong time for the police that had tried to pull him over.
Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, because I think they talk about this later on, like in the next scene, but I think like they put out like an APB for him or something like that based on their recommendations or whatever, right? Because like later on, isn't the like Scully's friend in trouble because she sent out these cops to get this guy, and now she's going to be sort of like on the hot seat for the fact that two cops got killed?
Yeah, I did get the feeling that was why they were there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also, I couldn't quite figure out, and maybe I have just missed something, but I couldn't figure out, and it did just feel like they know it's the same case, because, you know, scorch marks on the floor, but I couldn't tell whether or not they were sent there.
Yeah.
And I was almost certain the second time I watched around that they weren't, they just happened to be in the area. I might be wrong. I'm quite regularly wrong when I watch these episodes.
When I was watching it, I definitely felt like they did just happen to show up, but then it was just the dialogue in the next scene where I was like, okay, maybe I missed something. So I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
so she seems very concerned that she's now in trouble for having a possible cop killer on her hands. So Mulder and Scully start reviewing some surveillance tapes from the station, the crime scene, the scene of the disappeared policeman. And sees Banton staring at the floor. And after blowing up the frame on the screen, Mulder sees the logo for Polary Magnetics on his jacket. So Scully and Mulder go and visit Polarity Magnetics, where they meet scientist Christopher Davy. He identifies Banton, a physicist conducting research into dark matter. So now we get a little bit of backstory into the man, and he's now Dr. Banton, not just Mr. Banton. We now know he's a doctor, and he works on, a physicist working on the weird and wonderful world of dark matter.
Yeah, yeah. That scene where they discover that he works for him by blowing up the video on that image or whatever, probably the least realistic thing in this entire episode.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's a thing, you know, but like, let's enhance this image and then read this thing on this, you know, low-res NTSC. Yeah, no, that doesn't happen. But
no.
We'll let it slide. We'll let it slide.
It's one of those things that at this point we're almost at the end of season two. We suspend our disbelief for far too much at this point, I fear. So it turns out that Banton disappeared a little over a month earlier after an incident in his lab where he was locked into a target room with a particle accelerator, exposed to a large amount of subatomic particles, and now even Scully thinks it might be spontaneous human combustion, but Mulder doesn't think so anymore. So they go back to the station and find Banton at the station, but runs into a pretty poorly lit area and announces to them that walking into his shadow can be lethal. So Mulder shoots out the lights overhead so Banton can be taken into a mental hospital so they can arrest him in the dark, put him into a hospital where they can then put the lights on and things can go horribly wrong again.
It's, you know, and that was one of those things where, like, I feel like he should have said that to the cops in the alley, you know? I mean, like, even if the cops didn't believe him and were like, whatever, as soon as the first one stepped into his shadow and disintegrated, then maybe the other one would be like, whoa.
Yeah, the other one definitely would have run away.
Yeah, you know? But, you know, whatever. I mean, Mulder, you know, he believes people when they say things like that, which is reasonable. So, good for Mulder.
I'm not sure. It's one of those episodes where I don't believe that just because we've had a lot of science thrown at us that Scully would suddenly believe spontaneous human combustion.
Yeah.
Mainly because the thing happened to the Doctor, not to the people that disappeared. And I fear if I can make that logical leap, she should definitely be able to.
I mean, we're far enough along that she's, you know, experienced enough weird stuff that she can believe science experiments gone wrong, you know?
Yeah. So we're in a mental hospital. He explains the accident to Mulder and Scully and explains that his shadow is now a walking black hole, spitting atoms into component particles and reducing matter into pure energy, hence the scorch marks as they vanish off. Claiming that all the deaths are accidents and the government want to exploit what he has become, Mr. Oh, wow, I keep forgetting his name. This is not good.
Banton.
Yeah, Banton fears for his life, thinking that the government want him for what he's become and want to exploit what may or may not be a superpower.
And, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's kind of cool because they're like, is he paranoid? Yeah, maybe, but that doesn't mean he's not right, you know?
It doesn't mean they're not after him.
Yes, exactly. Which is kind of like what the X-Files is all about, in a sense. And so I think that's kind of a cool thing where, you know, they have like this guy who is maybe a little bit overboard talking about, like, you know, sucking out brains and stuff like that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, his fears are unfounded. And, it creates an interesting dynamic.
And this is where the episode gets much more interesting for me, because Detective Ryan calls the case closed, says they've caught the man that done it. One way or another, he either won't be leaving here or he'll go to prison or something. He'll be, you know, he won't be hurting anybody else. But Mulder contacts X, or Mr. X. And, yeah, like I say, for me, this is where it gets interesting. Because he's brought the main part of the conspiracy episodes into an episode which, until this point, had no conspiracy in it at all outside of Tony Shalhoub's mind.
Yeah, and Mr. X calls him on it. He's like, Mulder, we've talked about this. You can only call me for the mythology episodes. There's not enough money in the budget to pay for me for the Monster of the Week episodes. I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool.
Almost to the letter as well, that's what he says.
Yes.
But I do wonder, because obviously, you know, X knows about everything because that's his job. But I did wonder watching it if Mulder telling him about the man with the black hole shadow actually put him on to the man with the black hole shadow.
Yeah, that's the question, right?
Not hearing about it until this point, now he's off and trying to kidnap the man.
Yeah.
I do wonder if that's how it was meant to be, or if that's just me picking up on stuff that maybe I'm being a bit too paranoid as well.
I'm wondering if, like, maybe it was something that Mr. X's people were working on, and it was something where there was, like, you know, an email thread, which maybe he skipped over because it wasn't that interesting and probably didn't concern him. But then when this popped up, you know, he went back to the office and was like, hey, guys, I just talked to Mulder and he was telling me about this guy whose shadow is like a walking black hole. Is that something that we're doing? I forget.
Is that something like, he might be interested in?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, yeah, that guy. We've been looking for him. And he's like, okay, well, he's at this, you know, this hospital. Let's go get him. You know, I think that's probably how it went down.
Yeah. So in the dead of night, Mr. X turns up at Banton's mental hospital. The lights mysteriously all go out. And they try to break him out because they are definitely off to kidnap him, Mr. X and a couple of his associates. However, the emergency lighting turns on, throws a shadow across Mr. X's associates, who quickly vanish into the ether along with everybody else so far in this episode.
I really love that scene because we just came out of a scene where Mr. X starts yelling at Mulder for this and saying, leave me alone, I'm not interested, this has nothing to do with me, I'm not going to do anything about it. And then we see Mr. X being, you know, like, you know, a complete, you know, badass, sort of going in, you know, and doing this raid to get this guy in this like crazy stylized sequence. And I mean, that to me is just super cool. I mean, that's why I love that character so much. You know, I don't know. It's I really love that scene.
He is great. He is a very, because he's such a like a cut and dry character. He's like, okay, now I'm interested. Now I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah.
No messing around. We'll be back in a bit.
We don't see a scene where he's like, should I or shouldn't I? He's like, I'm not doing this. Mulling it over
in the pub with his mates.
Right. He's like, I'm not doing this. Leave me alone. And then in the very next scene, you see him, you know, doing it. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
The fact that it goes horribly wrong for him this time around means that maybe he should have spent a bit more time organizing it.
But that's cool, too, because you think of him as being sort of like at the top of his game. You know, he's the best in the world at this sort of thing. And he messed it up, you know?
Absolutely. He does have that. Cool. Until this point, you think he's completely infallible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's proven wrong in the most horrible of ways.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, no, I very much like that. So, of course, Banton legs it from the hospital and goes back to Polarity Magnetics and is confronted by Ryan. Now, this is the one bit I'm not really that much of a fan of. So Detective Ryan turns up and tries to re-arrest him. He knows who she is. She knows who he is. And this is the first time you see him purposefully kill somebody with his shadow.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how many times he says sorry as he does it. He purposefully killed her with his superpower black hole shadow. That was an interesting turn for me, because at this point on, anything else, I'm like, well, you deserve this now.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's I think that's pretty cool, because it's very not cut and dry. I mean, thinking about this, you know, in Vince Gilligan terms, and, you know, taking that sort of idea to an extreme with, you know, say Breaking Bad, you know, I mean, he's kind of known for doing this thing where characters who are, generally speaking, good people, or who certainly have the appearance of being good people, when pushed to the limit, they break bad, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
that's what he did. He broke bad. And I think that's kind of cool. It's like, oh, you know, he's, and certainly, I mean, you could make the argument too. It's not cut and dry. You could make the argument that he was doing that for the greater good, in a sense. You know, like, I get the impression that he was more than willing to die in order to stop this thing, because he couldn't live with the fact that he was hurting other people. And this woman was going to stop him and cause not necessarily her death, but more deaths. And that was something which he was trying to prevent. So, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. It's definitely, you know, a very interesting moral question. And there's definitely something about it which does not sit the right way when thinking about that character. I mean, I wouldn't argue that was, you know, not something that he should have done. But at the same time, the place that it's coming from was perhaps not an evil place.
I'd agree with you. Obviously, it makes for a much less interesting episode finale if he just gently walks forward and ends up suicide by cop.
But they even said, like, he can't do that because he's afraid that if he gets killed, then the thing will be like unleashed. So that was like why, like, I get the impression that if that would have been the end of it, he would have done that. But he needed to, like, get into this thing and shoot the rays at the whatever in order to, you know. So that was the reason why he didn't kill himself, I think. And they even said, like, do you think that's the case? And they're like, I don't know, but that's what he thinks. And that's kind of all that matters in this situation. You know, we're trying to figure out what he's doing. So
after he kills Ryan, he tries to convince Davey to, he tries to hide himself back in the particle accelerator and convince Davey to destroy him using the particle accelerator. But shock, horror, and massive twist. Turns out Davy is helping the government and wants to hand him over to the people that now suddenly want to experiment on him.
Crazy.
Which doesn't end up... It doesn't go very well for him. Really, does it?
Yeah, you know, sometimes people don't make the best career choices and, you know, whatever.
Sometimes we get fired. Sometimes the man we thought we were helping shoots us and leaves us at our desk. Which is absolutely the fate of Davy, who is left at his desk after X shoots him. And him and Banton have a staring contest through the little porthole in the particle accelerator for a long time as well. That is a long, long stare down between those two.
Well, you know, if your episode's running a few minutes short, you got to extend things here and there, so, you know.
I did like, I mean, when X first appears at that porthole window viewing thing, obviously it didn't make me jump, I knew it was coming, but that was a really cool, hi, here I am.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
He may as well have smiled and waved.
And, you know, I mean, the fact that he's the one who's there, too, you know, is just pretty, yeah, that's great.
I think you're supposed to assume, or you do assume, that it's him that's done the shooting. But, yeah, until that happens, you don't know it's X until he appears at the window with a big old smile on his face. And, yeah, a bit of a stare down and snap cut to Mulder and Scully turning up at the lab to find another scorch mark on the floor from the unfortunate detective and her demise. And suddenly hear the accelerator running, leg it to the room to look through the door. And they think that maybe, you know, too late to save Bantam because he's been, you know, they watch him evaporated. And he does just vanish into his shadow, him and the chair, which I didn't expect to see.
Yeah, they play it fast and loose with the what is sucked into this black hole and what is not. I mean, apparently it's people and clothing, but then, like, I don't know, like if, like, let's say someone's wearing a jacket, you know, and they get sucked in, the jacket gets sucked in as well. But if the shadow just goes over the jacket, then does the jacket get sucked in? I mean, how does this thing work? How do they know what... It doesn't matter.
It's a very specific weapon that takes out people, their clothing sometimes, and chairs. So we're now left to assume that all is done and dusted. Mulder contacts X in the... Is it a stadium or something?
It looked like it. I was almost wondering if they were trying to mirror like the scene from Deep Throat in the second episode, you know, of the show.
I've had quite a big gap in recording X-Cast episodes, so I haven't watched a lot of X-Files the last couple of months. I am almost certain that is the same place Mulder meets X for the first time, or one of the first times he meets him. Earlier on in this season.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Or it was at least supposed to mirror that, yeah.
Yeah. Where X tells him, you know, I have no loyalty to you and I've never promised you anything. Please don't ever contact me again. Which, okay, so we're getting towards the end of the season, so that seems like a good spot to wrap up any story that he might have with X, just in case he decides to not come back next season or we don't get a season 3. I don't know if season 3 had been confirmed at this point.
I think it was in the bag. I mean, I think at this point in time, I remember there was you know how like the Simpsons always does their like chalkboard gag at the first, you know, like in the opening credits or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember at one point, I don't know exactly when this was, but it was like Fox's fall lineup for you know, next season, and it had The Simpsons, The X-Files, and then the entire rest of the board was just blank. And I think by this point, X-Files was, you know, they realized that this was, like, the best thing that they had. And it was a for-sure go for season 3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would imagine that's how it went. It's one of those things that, because we're talking early episodes, 94 to 96 or 7, I never really paid attention to what was going on with whether or not we were getting new episodes. I just remember being gutted when they were no longer on the following week.
Yeah.
And then being ecstatic when they appeared again in September.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely different from now. Now, we all know what's coming a year before it happens. There's no mystery left anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's like you look in the TV guide and it says season finale and you're like, oh, okay.
The episode ends with Mr. X walking into... This is probably my favorite bit of the episode as well. Mr. X walks into what is obviously a research facility, has a little bit of a chat with the doctor, looks into a room, and there is Banton strapped up looking like the dude from Clockwork Orange, looking absolutely terrified. And the article I read, I think, sums it up perfectly. Experiments being performed on a despairing Banton.
Yeah, I mean, it is because, like, all of his greatest fears were realized. You know, he wasn't afraid of dying. He was afraid of the government taking him and basically experimenting on him for the rest of his life. And I do think that it's interesting how, like, in that scene with X and Mulder, you know, just prior to this, X, you know, he gave Mulder that little bit where he's like, I didn't kill him, just so you know, and you know, and he didn't kill him, you know, he stuck the other dude in there to make it look like he did. But, you know, even though X was saying that to Mulder in maybe a way of saying, like, look, I'm really not that bad of a guy, you know, like, I'm a bad guy, but I'm not that bad of a guy. Then when you see this, you see that he, in fact, was telling the truth, that he did not kill him, you know. You think, like, ah, oh, maybe he's actually worse of a guy. That's interesting, you know. And he didn't lie to Mulder, but, you know, the truth is a bit different. So yeah, I think that's
the devil in the details.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that wraps up Soft Light for us. That's an interesting, solid episode, if not the best episode I've ever seen. But
it did, I mean, it had sort of an interesting idea behind it, you know, whether or not, you know, it's super intriguing, whatever. I think the things that make it intriguing are the idea that this guy is super paranoid about the government, you know, using him in order to experiment and perhaps create some form of weapon or whatever, which, you know, is going to be way worse than anything he had originally intended. And also the idea of tying in character mythology into a Monster of the Week episode, you know, because that was always sort of like the problem with the show in a lot of ways. I know a lot of people consider it to be a strength, but the idea that, you know, it's like, these episodes are going to tell standalone stories, and these episodes are going to, you know, be part of the greater mythology, and never the two shall meet, you know, that kind of thing. I always liked it when, in some way or another, they were able to sort of, like, weave the mythology story into the standalone episodes.
Yeah, especially when, towards the end of this season as well, that we've gone quite a few Monster of the Week episodes with no actual mythology. So this is a nice way to tee up the last couple of episodes, which usually are mythology when they, you know, the last couple of episodes of every season usually is mythology leading into the cliffhanger in the next season.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
So to bring Mr. X in, don't forget he's over here. We still have him. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I didn't hate Soft Light. Like we said earlier, I wouldn't rush to watch it. I can, you know, get my X-Files and Tony Shalhoub fix plenty other places, but you know, the next time I binge it won't be one I skip over. It's more likely to be one I do a bit of work while it's on.
Well, especially the Vince Gilligan thing. I mean, that just kind of blew my mind. I mean, I've always been a fan of his, you know, especially with the X-Files, but also he's done, like, did you ever see Home Fries?
Yeah.
That movie is crazy, like absolutely crazy. And I think part of it is the fact that it was promoted as this little like romantic comedy. And then you find out that it's about like these guys who have like a mom who's trying to like kill. I mean, it's weird as hell. And, you know, then, you know, you look at like Breaking Bad and everything, and it's like, well, is this like the best television show ever? I don't know. It might be. And then Better Call Saul on top of that, which is like the weirdest spinoff you could possibly imagine. And I mean, Vince Gilligan is a master, like an absolute master. And obviously, you know, you always think of him as being like the guy from the X-Files who went on to do this other stuff. And, you know, to think that like this is the very, very, very first thing that he did is really, really interesting. You know, I'm definitely going to have to watch this again with that in mind.
It is interesting because he's one of those. X-Files has got that thing for me where every time, not so much now because I've watched it so many times and I watch so much other stuff as well. But about 5 years ago, I'd binge through the X-Files and suddenly go, oh, that's him from that thing. you know, and you can still do that and go, oh, geez, that's him, you know, everything down from, you know, Tony Shalhoub to, you know, Shawnee Smith, and you suddenly watch, you go, oh, shit, that's the chick from Saw, what the hell?
Yeah.
And I had the exact same thing with Vince Gilligan. I had to do the exact same thing when suddenly I was like, wait a minute, really? The dude that done Breaking Bad. Really?
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, I think it was sort of like the opposite, where I was a Gilligan fan, and then when Breaking Bad came out, I'm like, oh, really? He's getting his own show. I definitely have to check that out, you know? But he really took it to another level with that thing. I mean, I have to say.
Oh, absolutely. One of those things that I was an instant fan of, and that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, for sure. So it's exciting, and I really love, you know, kind of like looking at, you know, If you find like a filmmaker or a writer or something who you like, and then going back and looking at, you know, their very early work, I find that to be absolutely fascinating. I do two podcasts which are kind of all about that. So, you know, it's exciting to see it here with Gilligan for sure.
It is really good when you can go back and see, oh, this is early stuff. And it's, you know, obviously it's not at Breaking Bad level, but you can see the dude's writing. Once you know it's him, you go, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you see him working stuff out, you know, and sort of like, you know, planting the seeds that will become Breaking Bad later on. And I think you see that throughout his stuff on The X-Files. It's exciting.
Oh, absolutely, for sure.
I thought you had agreed not to contact me again about this.
You lied to me.
About?
About Chester Ray Banton. You knew who he was, and you used me to lead you to him.
You were the one who contacted me, Agent Mulder.
I won't be your stalking horse or the government's.
You seem to be mistaken about the amount of control you exercise over this arrangement.
You killed Dr. Benton!
Have you lost your mind?
A nurse at the hospital identified you. A young detective is dead because of you. Who do you answer to?
Despite my loyalty to my predecessor, I've never made you any promises.
All right, promise me something right now. Promise me this will be our last meeting. We're finished.
You're choosing a dangerous time to go it alone, Agent Mulder. Mulder! I didn't kill him.
So, in lieu of Tony's X quiz, we shall just do a bit of a wrap-up. Would you like to tell our listeners where they can find you outside of this episode, mate?
Sure. You can find me around the internet doing various podcasts. You can find me on my own website, commentarytrackstars.com, where I do a show called Commentary Track Stars, where we do a lot of audio commentaries and other things. We did, you know, shows, after shows, immediate, you know, reactions to all six episodes of The X-Files when it was on last year, and we've got a few other commentaries here and there, so check that out. You can find me on Trek.fm doing a show called Stage 9, which looks at the people who make Star Trek. And if you want to do a little bit of digging, also on Trek FM is a show called Commentary Trek Stars, in which we did a whole series on Cliff Bohl, the director who directed four episodes of The X-Files. We looked at all four, including, you know, like Bad Blood and stuff like that. So check that out. And you can find me on thenerdparty.com doing Great Shot Kid, which is where we look at the people who make Star Wars, basically the same as the other thing, just Star Wars instead of Star Trek. And you can find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing a show called Soderbergh 2828, where we look at every single Steven Soderbergh movie leading up to his new one, Logan Lucky.
That sounds interesting.
It's so much fun. You know, just getting to, we've just been watching one movie a week. It's so great.
See, I wasn't lying, was I, when I said veteran podcaster now, was I?
too many podcasts, I swear to God, you know.
You're a better man than me. I burn out if I do more than one or two in a week.
Yeah, no, I know the feeling for sure.
I mean, if you want to find me, I'm on Twitter at Brooker411. I write for and podcast for The Foul Critics, and I am the host or the co-host of a video game podcast at Character Unlock on Twitter if you want to find us there. And the X-Cast you can find on Twitter at @X_cast. You can find the X-Cast and X-Cast podcast and X-Files fan group on Facebook. And until next time, trust no one.
The X-Cast is produced and presented by Tony Black, part of the Black Hole Media podcast network. Title music is courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A-Y-E.